Well, I went to medical school at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City in 2000 to 2004, and then I did a four-year residency in anesthesia, also at the University of Utah. And my husband and I were looking for a cool mountain town out west, and Missoula kind of fit the bill, and we both found jobs that we liked here. So we moved here in 2009.
Tell me if I'm wrong. You went to the University of Oregon in Eugene.
Yes.
Got your bachelor's in Spanish and general science studies.
Yes.
So you've always been drawn to the math science world.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think medicine is an interesting mix because it is a lot of science, but there is an art to it, and there's a lot of kind of humanities aspect that appealed to me as well.
An art to it, what do you mean?
Well, specifically with anesthesia, it's kind of a vulnerable time for people. They're having an operation, and it's a time where I think connecting with your patient can be tricky, but also really valuable. And that's the art part, is just the intensity of putting someone at ease, explaining what to expect, and also reviewing their medical history and the risks that they're undergoing with surgery. So there's a lot of different facets of anesthesia that are outside of science.
Are there many female anesthesiologists?
For some reason, I don't know if it's all the breathing machines or the technicality of it in the operating room, but no, there are not a lot of women in anesthesia. About 30% of training programs in the country are female, of residents that are in anesthesia residencies are female, whereas medical schools are 50-50 nowadays.
When I think of anesthesiology, I think of an operating room scenario with the anesthesiologist sitting with his or her cart at the head of a patient. There's maybe a curtain dividing you from what the surgeon is doing down further below.
Yes. That is, I think, if you were to walk by an operating room and glance inside while a surgery was taking place, I think that's what you would see. You know, you would see the anesthesiologist at the head of the bed, like you mentioned, with the sterile barrier separating the surgeon, and he's focused on the gallbladder or the knee or the appendix. And the anesthesiologist is focusing on cardiac function, lungs, making sure the patient's breathing, making sure their vital signs are within a normal limit for that patient, giving medications necessary to render that patient completely asleep and comfortable and safe. But there's a much bigger scope of anesthesia, and there's lots of little niches or subspecialties also. Obstetric anesthesia is one that, you know, is a very kind of not in the operating room niche, but just really working and placing epidurals and spinals for C-sections. And it's just a different flow of work for sure. But we provide 24/7 staffing at Community Medical Center for OB anesthesia. But there's also other subspecialties within anesthesia, our pediatric anesthesia, cardiac anesthesia. These all require additional years of training.
What's cardiac anesthesia?
So cardiac anesthesia is specifically open heart surgery or thoracic surgery. And most anesthesiologists that practice in the heart room with cardiac surgeons have done additional training. Some of them are fellowship trained. We have fellowship trained anesthesiologists in our group in every subspecialty of anesthesia. So cardiac, pediatric anesthesia. Chronic pain is also a subspecialty of anesthesia, which is a completely different clinic-based practice, as well as critical care anesthesia. So an ICU physician, or they call themselves intensivists, who staff critical care patients in the ICU, often are anesthesiologists as well. And that's definitely not your typical scenario of sitting in the operating room. There, they're rounding on patients that are critically ill.
Intensivists.
Yes.
What a great name for a band.
Yeah. I
Intensivists.
know.
And also things like when little kids don't want to cooperate with dentists, they're being a little fussy. Is that sometimes do you guys come in and?
Absolutely. So we work regularly with the pediatric dentists in town who schedule patients that require a deeper level of anesthesia to do what they need to do for those patients. And so those patients actually come to the hospitals here or the surgery centers in Missoula and undergo general anesthesia, where they're actually intubated with a breathing tube through their nose, down into their windpipe, into their trachea, so that the dentist, the pediatric dentist, can work on the mouth of the patient. And we're involved in completely in that process.
Does it make you crazy when people suggest, or maybe they don't, that anesthesiologists aren't real doctors?
It doesn't make me crazy, but I wish they could spend a day with me and see what my job is like and understand the huge amount of information that I'm assessing and processing and applying to my patient. And then just like I said, the human side of it. I mean, I really do feel like I am the patient's guardian while they are undergoing surgery. That's how I view my job.
I'm not asking for a big, long dissertation here, but very briefly, what is the history of anesthesiology? I think back to a long time ago, surgery and dental stuff, mm-hmm. It just sounds like a nightmare. When did anesthesiology really come into its...
So, you know, over a century ago in the early 1900s, people started using drugs like nitrous oxide and ether. And often it was, you know, a haphazard side thing where the surgeon would be trying to do surgery but also administer the anesthetic. And not until really into the mid, 1900s to 1960s, 1970s did anesthesia really evolve as a specific person that was focused on just administering drugs to render the patient unconscious and comfortable and alive. And it wasn't even until the 1980s that a true residency developed for medical doctors in our country that they could complete specific training, 3 to 4 years of really just the scope of anesthesia itself.
The 1980s.
Yeah. The changes that have gone place in my specialty in anesthesia in the last 20 to 30 years have been paramount. I mean, we've really reduced errors. We've modeled our kind of practice after the airline industry to have checklists and really fail-proof systems so that people are safe.
Yeah. How safe is it?
It's very safe. You look at numbers of complications and risk, and I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of patients have anesthetics without any long-term complications. Now, small complications such as a reaction to tape on your skin or nausea and vomiting after anesthesia, I mean, those are side effects of having the whole process. But large morbidity and mortality reports really show that it's safer than driving your car on the freeway.
Dr. Sullivan, when we're out, what's going on in our brains?
When we're unconscious?
Yes.
You know, there are lots of different types of levels of unconsciousness, I think, is the most interesting thing to think about. Because, you know, you could give somebody a drug that has amnesia effects. They won't remember anything, but they could still be talking and moving and reacting. You could give somebody another drug that really stops their respiratory rate and affects the brainstem and really renders them completely unconscious and actually apneic, so not breathing for themselves. So somebody will need to step in and help that patient breathe because they lost their respiratory drive in their brain. And then there are other drugs that kind of have an in-between effect, that you don't remember anything and you're not moving and you're unconscious, but yet you're still breathing on your own. And really, it's knowing the class of drugs and the types of drugs that you're administering to a patient and the effects that that drug has on their bodily function.
Are there cases where people are under and they wake up later and say, I felt what was happening, or I heard you all goofing on my tattoo or something like that?
No. You know, there is the term intraoperative awareness is a real term. It typically occurs with patients that are trauma patients and they're trying to die, they're hemorrhaging, and they really won't tolerate any of the drugs we'd like to give them because they would drop their blood pressure or heart rate to zero. Or patients having open heart surgery and going on to cardiopulmonary bypass, it's difficult to kind of continue a smooth level of anesthesia for unconsciousness in those scenarios. There is an incidence of intraoperative awareness. I like to think that that's never going to happen in my practice. I'm very vigilant. I, you know, I'm nonstop assessing my patient's level of anesthesia. But it is a real thing.
You are a partner of Missoula Anesthesiology. That's a local professional corporation here in Missoula. You are a partner with 27 other anesthesiologists, correct?
I am, yes.
My understanding is there aren't many private practices left standing, generally speaking, in the medical field.
Yes.
Obvious question, one, why is that? And why do you all exist still as a private practice?
Great question. So, you know, everyone talks a lot about how the healthcare environment in our country is changing, and it really is. But there has been a large movement for physicians to become employees of companies and hospitals. And across the country, I've heard numbers saying greater than 50% of medical doctors are now employees, whether it be of a large corporation such as Kaiser or a hospital or what have you. Missoula anesthesiology is unique in that we are the largest specialty-specific group of physicians in private practice in Montana. And anesthesia is a specific, special niche also because we have very little overhead. We don't have an office with clinic staff and a bunch of employees. You know, our overhead is much smaller than a surgeon who has an office and nurses and stuff like that. So anesthesiologists have been able to maintain private practice status for the most part. It's about 65 to 70% are numbers that I've heard for anesthesiologists in the United States that are still in private practice. In Missoula, there are still some private practice groups outside of our group that have maintained independence, the ear, nose, and throat physicians, the urologists, Missoula Bone and Joint. But there, you know, most physicians nowadays that you're going to see that if you have a medical problem are probably an employee of a large business.
The Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever term one prefers, it's a very hot button issue. I'm not asking for your personal thoughts on it, but I am curious, what sort of impact do you and your colleagues think that will have on the field of anesthesiology, I guess, specifically, or do you see any changes coming?
Well, it's hard really for us to predict, I think, the future, especially as the Affordable Care Act is fighting to have more people join and to really, you know, implement its goal of providing universal health care for our country. I think that is, for me, that story remains untold. I'm curious how it'll all play out. But for us right now, at least in early April in 2014, we have noticed a lot more self-pay due to high deductibles from patients, and then just the process of insurance and actually the time to receive our accounts that we've sent out has been delayed a bit this year. I'm not sure if there's just been, I think, more upheaval with insurance companies redoing contracts with the patients or what. But so we have seen a delay as far as billing goes, but and obviously, you know, our reimbursement rates have dropped a little bit. But I feel very fortunate in my job. I love my job in Missoula, and I'm optimistic.
Let's say someone out there, final question, doctor, someone out there knows they're going in for some sort of a procedure, be it minor or major. What sort of conversations should they have with their anesthesiologist? Or is it just you go in, you get knocked out, and that's it?
No. I think, unfortunately, we get to meet our patients just a few minutes before they do go back to the operating room, but the patient should feel like they have voiced all of their concerns about having surgery and the risks of surgery and anesthesia with their anesthesiologist. And they should feel like they're able to have a meaningful, intense, but end brief conversation about what to expect that day from their anesthetic and moving forward as they're in the healing process from their surgery. The anesthesiologist should take the time to hold the patient's hand, listen to their heart and lungs, and actually interact with the patient, review their medical history, and explain the process that the patient's about to go through.
I've been speaking with Dr. Christy Sullivan, a partner of Missoula Anesthesiology PC. Real pleasure to have you come in and tell us about this.
Thank you, Ed.